Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your exercising editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. He is out on his daily power walk as we record this. And Kevin, you're not the only one moving. That transfer portal has blown up.
Yeah, nationwide, and Baylor is no different. In fact, Baylor's activity with players leaving and coming in, quite extraordinary. They had 10 guys who entered the portal from the 2022 season, I should say. They've added nine, technically eight on scholarship, but Jack Stone, the kicker from Michigan State from Highland Park. I'm not sure if he's on scholarship yet, but having said all that, you've got 19 guys that either left or are arriving at Baylor, and they all should be getting onto campus if they're not already there this week since classes started Tuesday. But this is the new normal, Stephen, with the portal periods being, you know, put in a different, this is the new year of the first year of the new portal system, where the declaration period began December 5th, and it actually ends Wednesday today, the 18th of January. Now, for guys that are still in the portal that don't have a landing spot, they can still visit wherever they want if they do get that kind of interest. But it's also going to be kind of tricky about trying to get them in when spring semesters for schools or quarter systems, depending on how schools are lined up with their systems, you know, for class schedules, how that all kind of works out. But, and then you don't have the next portal period until May, small window there. But this is what we're looking at here. So Baylor has 18 scholarship guys that are coming to the campus that arrived getting through into their first week of classes between the portal and then the mid-semester enrollees from the 2023 high school class.
Okay, and this is what is really shows you how much things have changed, that you say, oh, well, 18 people, well, they turn that over every year, but you still got 11 people coming in this summer that are high schoolers that signed in. So it's going to be over a third of that team is going to have changed over, and it could be worse. We could be Oklahoma State.
Well, I mean, there's other schools. I mean, I think, like my alma mater, SMU, I think I saw a stat where like maybe 40% of that roster is changing over. And, of course, we've seen the stats where Texas A&M had over 20 guys, maybe 26 guys is maybe the number I saw from the 2022 roster that entered the portal. And then you have other programs like Georgia and Alabama, who I think had like 12, you know, somewhere in the teens or something like that. So it's everywhere. And again, the thing for what Baylor got with, you know, Sawyer Robertson, the quarterback from Mississippi State, the Barrington brothers, the offensive lineman from BYU, Dominic Richardson, the running back from Oklahoma State, Keetron Jackson, the wide receiver from Arkansas, you know, just to name a couple. Those are the guys that they really need to make an instant impact for this 2022 or 2023 team that, of course, as we know, had the very disappointing finish, and they've got to hit the reset button and get going fast.
All right. Let's just kind of run down the list and tell me what you think on these guys that are signing in for the early show up. Will they impact or will they not? All right, Gerald Boykins, 6'3", 320 pounds.
Yeah, these are the mid-semester high school guys, and Gerald Boykins, the junior college transfer from Kansas, better be an impact guy because they're bringing him to take over for Apu Ika at the nose. And so I think from that standpoint, they're probably, you know, these next couple of months for him before spring football starts, just to get more in line with the strength and conditioning program of a D1 strength and conditioning program will be valuable to him to start carving that body, you know, from a stamina standpoint, from a strength standpoint, you know, all that good stuff.
Boykins, and that was always the thing to me with Ika, was that he never got in condition where he could be an every down player. He had to come off the field. If this guy can be on the field, I mean, look, nose tackles take a lot of abuse anyway.
Right. I think what you have to hope for with Boykins is if you need him for third down, can you use him for third down? And I think that was where Apu's kind of hit and miss with this team in 2022 was, that he could give you two good downs, but to get three consecutive downs out of him, a little bit asking too much there. So again, it's all about what you're willing to work and how are you willing to stay in a position to get yourself in condition to do that sort of thing.
Okay, Caden Jenkins out of Louisville, Texas.
I think he's got a red shirt looking right at him in the face. Too small in terms of just being able to play D1 ball right away.
Yeah, 6'1", but only 165 pounds. That's running around in the shower to get wet. So,
yes.
All right, Trey Wilson?
From Lakeview Centennial, the defensive end. I think he's an interesting guy. They do need some candidates. They are going to get, T.J. Franklin has announced he's coming back. They're probably going to, it looks like, Gabe Hall will return as well. So they got two answers on the defensive line, veteran guys that are returning. Maybe we'll make a better impact this year. Well, T.J. had a pretty decent year last year. Gabe was kind of hit and miss last year. But having said that, I've always maintained the philosophy that linemen on both sides of the ball really need that red shirt year, even if they're playing in the minimum four games, because they are going to, again, need that strength program to get them ready to understand the physicality of playing Power 5 football.
All right. And then we have, and one of the things about Baylor last year was everything kind of went south in the second half of the season.
Right.
But the kicking game was really weird how it went south, because that and the punting and everything had been a strength.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. All right. Palmer Williams, is he going to make a difference?
I think he'll have an opportunity to compete for the starting kicking job, if not be the punter. For this team next year. So my thinking is that, that's partly the reason why he is showing up early, because he's got to go through spring and show the coaching staff that he can do this. I mean, he had some pretty solid numbers kicking out there in North Carolina, but, there were some games too where he kind of probably missed a couple things. He could also be, if he doesn't win the starting kicker job, or if he, isn't the punter for whatever reason, maybe he's your kickoff guy, because he did a pretty good job with touchbacks when he was in high school.
Yeah, and that's one thing about place kicking and punting is you can't tell until it's in a game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but guys can hit pre-game, they'll hit 60-yard field goals. Game starts, they're missing 20.
Look at Brett Maher for the Cowboys in the playoff game against Tampa the other night. Guys had a tremendous career. And just for whatever reason, got the yips Monday night and missed his first four.
Yeah. Okay. Then we've got Carl Williams, the fourth cornerback. All right. Do you see him being able to get on the field?
I like him a lot. I think the one thing that's a concern is that he got banged up a lot this past season. If it wasn't a dislocated knee, it was just something else. And I think maybe the concern would be, does he have enough, and that might be where he probably doesn't need to play next year, even in any of the games, unless it's blowout situations or something like that. So I just think it's a case where they've got to get his body right from all these injuries and put him in the right rehab program. Because heaven knows, high school rehab programs can be the best for what they are at that level, in that school, what have you, but transitioning to a rehab program, at the Division I level, night and day. And I really think that that's got to be the focus for him. I like him a lot. And if he wasn't banged up like he was during the course of the season, I would say he's got a shot, but I'm not so sure.
Yeah, and when you go from high school to college, when you get to college, you don't get any faster, but everybody else is faster than they were the guys you played in high school.
Well, yeah, and then the other thing is, too, is that Baylor's secondary got so chewed up with veteran guys back, or guys who had been on the roster for the last couple of years. Do you really want to take that chance of putting true freshmen back there anyway after what happened in 2022?
Yeah, but there's probably a reason a lot of those guys weren't starting before.
It's true.
Then we've got running back Bryson Washington out of Franklin. And, Franklin's changed. They didn't used to be that good a school, and they've turned into a beast.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they've been to the state championship the last 3 years, won the last two. I think it's a 32-game winning streak that program's on. Bryson rushed for 2,000-plus this state championship season in 2022. You know, and the fact that Baylor's running back room is a little bit up in the air with, you know, Squirrel Williams hitting the portal, Tate McWilliams' future, is he ever going to play again? I mean, I'm more concerned about that since he never returned after the BYU game. And so with Bryson, I mean, I would think that that's maybe an opportunity for them to look at him, and would he be in a position to pass a guy like Jordan Jenkins? You know, there's the philosophy about Jordan Jenkins. You know, Jordan had that great year at Lindale a couple of years ago where he had over 3,000 yards, and Lindale had this miraculous season where they got to the state championship game and then they got blown out.
Yeah.
But sometimes you wonder, though, for as much as he ran the football, did he put too many miles on the tire, and he's just not the effective back that Baylor was hoping he was going to be because of how much he was used. Now, with Bryson, you know, he ran for 2,000 yards, but it was almost like effortless in some respect, because in some of these games where he was rushing for near 200 yards or over, he didn't get a lot of carries. So he had that burst or that breakaway speed. Mind you, it's at the 3A level. But I think he's a guy that would get consideration to be in the rotation, especially given the fact that you've got one who's gone in Squirrel and one whose future you don't know about in Tay.
Yeah, and if there is any position that will immediately transfer to college because so much of it is instinctual, it's running back.
Yes, totally agree. And that's another good reason why I think he would have an opportunity to show something in spring ball to take it into fall camp so that he could be a part of the rotation.
Okay, and here's one that I'm going to, like, do a woo-woo-woo and my Karnak, and I'm going to say this guy is not going to see the field this year. It's Wes Tucker, offensive lineman out of Argyle. He's 6'5", but he's only 270 pounds as an offensive tackle. That says strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, that's next. They got to get him over three. They got to get him close to 300, especially if they think they're going to play him at guard or tackle, which is what they're looking at since he's already on campus. So, yeah, I would say if everything falls the way Baylor would like for it to fall, see you in 2024.
All right, then Kloppenstein, Matthew, tight end out of Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, they got Jake Roberts, the tight end out of North Texas, to add to the room. You know, they've got two other tight ends that they feel pretty good about between Drake Dabney, who should be ready for spring ball with his leg, broken leg that he suffered at Tech. And that was the last weekend of October, I think it was. And then you have Kelsey Johnson, who had some pretty good moments, especially in the TCU game. But you have Kelsey Johnson, who I think could make a contribution. So you got three right there. You probably need a fourth. I would say with what they've got on the roster right now, as young as that room is, I would say that Matthew probably not. And he would be like another offensive lineman who probably needs the strength and conditioning program as well.
And then we've got Hawkins Polly that we saw at the last Rivals camp.
Yes. Same thing with him, like Kloppenstein.
All right. And then Micah Gifford, wide receiver, 6'3", 185 pounds. You know, they really missed having a long, tall receiver last year.
Yes. Yes, they did. And, I mean, they had it, if you will, with Hal Presley. They just weren't going to him enough just because the wide receiver room just did not develop the way everyone was kind of hoping would it be. And, of course, that was maybe toward the back half of the season where that just didn't come to fruition. I wouldn't see Micah being a part of the rotation of anything. Of course, Keytron Jackson being there isn't a guy that they want to have instant results with because he's played at the P5 level. He's played at the SEC level, of course. But I look at it this way with the Baylor wide receiver room. There were more questions than answers with the wide receivers last year. I mean, this is going to be a big spring, too, I think, for a guy already on the roster like Armani Winfield. He's got to step up and do something this spring camp. But my feeling is that if you're Gifford and you show up there in January, whether you think you've got a shot to really be a part of the rotation or not, go all out and Because what Baylor lacks, as you just mentioned, is a tall wide receiver that can win 50-50 balls. They're hoping they're getting that from Keytron, but it wouldn't be bad to have a second guy who could do that. And if you're Micah, give it a shot.
Okay, and if we're going to jump into – now, those were all of the incoming freshmen that are going to be doing spring ball. Now, you had mentioned Keytron Jackson, wide receiver out of Arkansas, transfer portal, so you think he's going to be an impact?
He has to be.
All right, and then we've got the Barringtons, Clark and Caleb, offensive line out of BYU. It's kind of nice to have some guys who have already been through a strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, and they also have played the game, too, and they know Eric Mateo, so that's a big thing. Clark more than Caleb, because Caleb never played for Eric, but knows who he is, and obviously knowing what his brother thought about him. But, yeah, they're going to be there. Whether they're going to be next to each other or bookends at tackles for the offensive line, who knows? But, you know, they've got to play. They've got to make an impact, because all five of that starting offensive line for Baylor either graduated or hit the portal.
Right, and then a guy that we have seen before, Dominique Richardson, they just stole him from Oklahoma State. That's got to make for a weird feeling when you walk out on the field next year.
Yeah, he'll get to do that for the next 2 years. And, in fact, of course, as we know, when Baylor plays Oklahoma State next year, that's going to be in Stillwater, so that will be kind of an interesting reunion, if you want to call it that. But he'll be a veteran guy in the room, has over 1,100 rushing yards in his career. He did have some injury issues toward the end of this year, but I think the fact that he is a guy that's well-versed, you know, in the P5 game and that sort of thing, that I think that he'll be ready to go and be a part of this. And I think he'll probably be the, if you will, the lead dog in the room for Baylor.
Yeah, and then we have, let's see, Isaiah Brunson, defensive back out of Miami.
Didn't come here to sit on the bench, and if he doesn't get into the rotation, then Baylor blew this evaluation. And they really need some answers, and they really need some help in the secondary. I think, you know, they could really use a second guy, second corner to join this roster coming from another program, whether it's a really good G5 program or whether it's a guy coming from another P5 program. But they really needed somebody there. But Brunson, he was a four-star recruit when he signed with the Hurricanes, you know, and he only played in, I think, roughly 40 snaps during the 2022 season. So, you know, that whole transition year with Mario Cristobal just, for some reason, just never really got the opportunity, or maybe there was just something that maybe Mario's defensive staff just didn't like about him, and that's why he's in Waco now. But he's a guy that has, you know, plenty of great speed, can turn his hips really fast. Now it's just a matter of really getting the opportunity to play and show what he can do. So now he's got that because he knows jobs are available with this secondary in 2023.
All right, and you'd already mentioned Jake Roberts coming in, tight end from North Texas. So he's making a big step up.
Yes. Yeah. He'll be a part of the tight end room and be wouldn't be a bit surprised if he's kind of splitting starting role or splitting snaps with Dabney.
All right, and then our last portal guy, Mike Smith, linebacker out of Liberty.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, obviously, he's going to play, and they're going to give him every opportunity to start. And, of course, you know, when you look at this, they probably need to get – I don't know where they want to put him, to be honest with you, Stephen. I don't know if they want to put him on the outside or put him back in the middle where Dylan Doyle was. But he's a guy that's uber productive, you know, led Liberty in tackles last year. And I know we talked about this last week. The concern is that has he kind of reached the point where he's peaked? I don't know. Maybe, hopefully not for Baylor's sake, but they need someone veteran in the middle of that defense, or just at least in the middle tier of that defense. And Smith has the track record to show that he can get it done. So, and he played really well for Liberty last year, but hopefully it's a case where he can take that next step into the Big 12. Only 1 year for him at Baylor.
Now, before we jump into basketball, quick notation. Baylor picked up A.J. Stewart from Oregon State to replace Juice Johnson, who absconded back up to Texas Tech with Joey McGuire. I personally thought they should have gone for somebody else with a weird nickname.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That, I appreciate your humor. Thank you for that. But anyway, I think, you know, he's a pretty young guy because he just finished playing in college 12 years ago at Kansas. So he's in his early 30s. He has a pretty decent coaching resume between where he was at with Arizona, BYU. That's where the connection is, was his BYU days, you know, with Jeff Grimes. So that makes a difference there. So there, and then of course he was at Rice, so he knows Texas a little bit too. And of course the fact they made him assistant head coaching job, you know, losing Juice hurt, I thought. Pretty good recruiter. You know, he had South Dallas in terms of recruiting for Baylor's coaching staff, and that was important to have that. And if it was really, you know, and Baylor made a last-ditch effort for Juice to come on board, you know, or to stay with them when Tech made the offer and, of course, gave him assistant head coaching duties. And, you know, if Baylor just flat out was too late or wasn't aggressive enough or their counteroffer to him wasn't to his liking, I think it probably, you know, that's probably where the mistake was. But I'm not going to throw this all at Baylor. Because last year, remember when I reported that everybody said, when I said there was a chance that Juice could go with Joey to McGuire up to Tech this year, and it didn't happen. Well, I come to find out that there was something going on with Juice's wife with her job, where she kind of had to stay on for an extra year with her job, with her contract. So I think with the way that was all set up, that he couldn't leave. But with that situation apparently changing, this opened up the door for him to do this. So I think you could look at maybe Juice going to Tech and saying, looking back now with hindsight, is maybe it was just a matter of time before he joined Joey then versus whether or not he was going to join Joey at all.
And, you know, sometimes we forget that people have lives outside of the between the stripes.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because quick sidebar start on this. I know a high school football coach who was reassigned after this season, even though he took his team to the playoffs. And I asked him offline, I said, well, are you looking for any opportunities to do whatever? And he goes, I'm not your typical high school football coach. When my wife and I got married 18 years ago, I told her that I was going to stay in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And we live over in this part of, you know, on the west side of DFW, and we're going to stay here. And whatever happens, we'll figure it out. So that tells you what it means to him, that coaching is a big thing, but it's not everything.
All right. Now, if we jump over to basketball, let's take a quick look. Baylor is back in the top 25 at number 21, and they're back up to 500 in conference. So that's the good news. Now, here's the bad news. The three teams that they've lost to are a combined 13-4. The three teams that they beat are a combined 1-15 in conference. If they're going to move up, they have got to start beating teams in the top half of the bracket. And two of those losses were at home.
Right. And look, two of those losses, too, were a single possession game. You know, their three losses are to Iowa State, TCU, and Oklahoma State. TCU by one, last second shot. Kansas State by two in overtime, where they had an opportunity, of course, and that didn't work out. So it's that close. And then, of course, their three wins are against West Virginia, still winless, I believe. Oklahoma State has one win, I believe. And then Texas Tech, who's still winless in the league. So you can look at it. It's a glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. Do you say, well, look who they've beaten? But then, so is it kind of a hollow 3-3? But then you look at it and say, but yeah, it is. It's a solid 3-3 because they've taken care of business against the second division of the conference, which they need to be doing. And then they've got another road opportunity Saturday afternoon in Norman against Oklahoma, a team that's kind of flirting around 500, a team that they probably should beat, because if they don't beat them, they're looking at 3-4 with Kansas coming into town for Big Monday on the 23rd.
Yeah, and that Kansas game, I think, is going to be one of the defining games of the season for them, which, when is the Kansas game not?
Yeah, that's turned into a great rivalry, of course, over the years, just because of what the programs have done the last couple of years. Last two national champions shared the Big 12 title last year. You know, for what Baylor's wanting to do, instead of saying, you know, reprioritizing their goals, if you will, when they got off to the 0-3 start was, don't worry about the Big 12 championship. Just worry about trying to get back to 500, and then you can find out how the rest of the league is playing at that time to determine, do we have a shot to really compete for the Big 12 championship? And my answer is yes, but then you've got to take care of business against the teams that are in front of you, and that's Kansas, who you have an opportunity with on Monday. But again, you've got to beat the other teams that are below you or sitting right next to you in the conference standings, that sort of thing.
Yeah, they can't be looking at Kansas when they take the court against the Sooners.
Absolutely, for sure.
All right, you want to close it out for us?
Sure. So we'll have coverage, we'll keep you going, I should say, with all the portal information of all the portal profiles. We'll have a couple more up this week. Probably do a Q&A session with the, Ask Sikkim Sports on Friday, and then we'll have full coverage of both games Saturday at Oklahoma and then Monday, big Monday, against Kansas. And we'll talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.